I'm understanding we're ready to kick off.
Perfect. Excuse me. Good afternoon, everybody. Thanks for everyone for taking the time to be here with us today, both members of the public tuning in to listen and provide input, and to the members of the Just Transition Working Group. Today, we are very pleased to host a public engagement meeting on behalf of the Just Transition Working Group focused on understanding workforce training and development in the new clean energy economy. This is a topic of particular relevance to me and to the work of the New York State Department of Labor, so I'm very excited to hear all of today's topics. This topic is a priority for my co-chair, President Harris, and NYSERDA as well. We know New York's clean energy economy is filled with promise and stands to support new good jobs as we work toward the goals of the CLCPA. But we will need targeted, innovative approaches to ensure our clean energy workforce is developed and ready to deliver clean energy solutions at the scale we will need and across a variety of sectors. Our Just Transition Working Group has been discussing these important topics, but this afternoon we're turning the virtual microphone around and opening up an opportunity for stakeholders and members of the public to provide their input, insights, and recommendations. So thank you to all of you for joining us. Let's move to the next slide to look at our agenda. So as you can see, today's agenda will feature three main elements. First, we will hear about New York's existing clean energy workforce landscape with a presentation from BW Research. Second, we will have the chance to hear from four organizations working directly on clean energy workforce training and development as listed on the slide. And third, we will then open things up for a public comment session, working our way through those who signed up in advance to provide comments. And time allowing, we will have opportunity for others attending to sign up to speak too. Across all these agenda items, our intent for today is to provide a platform and forum for information sharing and to foster insightful dialogue in support of the Just Transition Working Group's efforts around workforce development and in New York's broader pursuit of the goals of the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act. Let's move to the next slide, please. And with that, I will pass things back to my co-chair, President and CEO Harris.
Thank you, Commissioner, and good afternoon, everyone. Before we dive into the agenda Commissioner Reardon just shared, I would like to take a moment to highlight the members of the Just Transition Working Group, as you see here on this slide. This diverse list of members have dedicated their time over the last 6 months or so to the important scope of this working group. Their thoughtful contributions have helped bring today's agenda and focus on workforce interests together. We will forego our usual roll call of each of our members in the interest of time, but know that they are here to listen and take in your feedback. And to the members, thank you for being here today to listen and observe. And we will be reserving time at a future meeting to debrief and discuss the feedback we hear today. For those who may not be intimately familiar with the scope and work of this working group, the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act charges the Just Transition Working Group with a number of workforce-related tasks, including, and I quote, advise the Climate Action Council on issues and opportunities for workforce development and training related to energy efficiency measures, renewable energy, and other clean energy technologies, with specific focus on training and workforce opportunities for disadvantaged communities and segments of the population that may be underrepresented in the clean energy workforce, such as veterans, women, and formerly incarcerated persons, as well as to advise the council and conduct stakeholder outreach on any other workforce matters directed by the council. So today's session follows in the spirit of these work streams, and we're very excited to take in public input pertaining to these topics here today. With that brief orientation, we will move into our first presentation. If we turn to the next slide, please. I'd like to now welcome Phil Jordan of BW Research to provide some insight and detail into New York's current clean energy workforce. Phil?
Thank you, President Harris. Thank you, Commissioner Reardon. Happy to be presenting this newly released research for New York on the clean energy industry statewide, with some overview of some of the more recent trends as a result of some of the economic impacts of COVID-19. I'll speak for maybe 10 or so minutes, and I'll also be actively listening throughout and appreciate any of the public comments that come in today. Next slide, please. So the Clean Energy Industry Report is really an ongoing research project. This is the fourth edition of the New York Clean Energy Industry Report that was released in early 2021. And really what we're looking at is sort of how clean energy technologies and activities are impacting employment sectors across the state of New York and looking at those trends. We do take an early look at the COVID-19 impacts and recovery, as I referenced in this report. We also look very deeply into employer needs, workforce training and development opportunities so that we can make sure that the benefits that accrue from New York's leadership in clean energy deployment accrue to the maximum number of New Yorkers as possible. Next slide. So as you can see, the clean energy sector across the state of New York was growing quite rapidly over the last 5 years. So over that period of time, clean energy jobs grew to a point where they represent about 1.7% of all employment in the state. And those annual increases were growing at about three times the rate of all jobs statewide. So a really impressive sector, both in size and growth rate. Now, COVID-19 obviously had some significant impacts on the sector. So as of the end of 2020, New York had lost 11,815 clean energy jobs since February. And that's the net loss. It actually went down quite a bit more than that. But as we can see on the next slide, it's rebounded slowly but surely and steadily each month. So about 9,000 of the jobs that had been lost have come back. And the recovery trajectory is really interesting in New York in that it shows that New York has a very resilient clean energy sector. So while nationwide the clean energy sector is down about 12.5%, New York is only at 7.2% cumulatively. So really has rebounded quite a bit more quickly than the national clean energy sector. So some encouraging news, though there is still some ground to catch up on in 2021. Next slide. This gives you some of the COVID employment impacts by technology. What we can see is that things like energy efficiency and clean and alternative transportation sort of lead the way with grid modernization and storage in terms of job losses. And really what we're looking at here is a pretty broad scale decline. Renewable fuels to a lesser extent, though it's a smaller segment than most of the others, so a little bit less of an impact when we look at the total number of jobs lost. But clearly we start to see that that we're seeing pretty broad scale impacts, and as we dig into the data more clearly, we see that a lot of those impacts are compounded in the residential sectors and the distributed sectors. So just a lot of disruptions to customer channels and to workforce, and we'll be getting into that in a couple of slides. And obviously there's a lot more detail in the report, which is publicly available on NYSERDA's website. Next slide. We also look at the value chain, which is sort of the nature of the work or business that's being conducted. So what we see here is really it's installation sectors where we saw most of the job declines over the period at 10.2%. Over the year. Manufacturing struggled as well. Again, a lot of that was based on sort of deployment delays and other challenges with supply chain disruptions. The good news is that these are sectors that have been growing fairly rapidly in New York. And so we think that there's some positive indications going into 2021 that the rebound is underway and should continue to add jobs over the months ahead. Next slide. So interestingly, what we found is that the clean energy firms that made it, those that are still in business, right, that weathered the storm, over the course of our outreach to them, we found that they've really brought back all of their lost employment. So the firms that made it have rebounded pretty well. Sadly, there were a number of firms that that were not able to continue. That obviously has contributed to some of the declines. There was some concern, at least going into 2021, particularly on the beginning of 2021. When we were collecting these data, we were sort of in the midst of another surge, really nationwide and throughout the Northeast of the coronavirus. So there was some concern about some temporary slowdowns. What this really tells us is that clean energy businesses are looking at virus trends themselves in terms of their anticipation about growth and decline of their sector. It's an area that's top of mind for them, right? It's a really clear message to get the employment back and humming. We have to get the virus under control. And then we've also found that certain segments, like as we mentioned in the residential side, heat pump installers reporting a lot of difficulty getting financing, reaching new customers, and getting those installs done. While solar firms really have said that there have been very few impacts to their activities. Again, on the residential side, certainly some challenges with the sales channels, but in terms of their operations, they're moving along pretty well. And then, you know, obviously on the non-HVAC, other energy efficiency work, non-electrification work, slightly more difficulty and certainly some more project delays on that side. Next slide. We also look at the regional employment. We go into a lot of detail in the report, so I'm not going to go into too much detail here, but the key takeaway is that this sector is creating jobs all throughout New York State. And when we look at the intensity, meaning the number of clean energy jobs as it relates to the total number of jobs in a region, we see the Capital Region and Long Island are particularly strong for clean energy. But it is important to note that these are robust figures in all the economic regions of the state. Next slide. We track the demographic data very closely. And what we find here is that New York is pretty similar to the U.S. Overall in the clean energy sector. So the clean energy industry employs significantly fewer women and people of color than other sectors in the state economy. And, you know, this is, I think, an indication that the efforts around diversity, equity, and inclusion that NYSERDA and other agencies are undertaking are properly targeted. And we are tracking this progress over time, as this is an annual report. And, you know, we think that there's good justification for those programs certainly a significant opportunity to make an impact there. Next slide. Wages and benefits, again, in the report, we go into lots of detail, but in summary, we found that wages are high in most clean energy industries and that there are premiums, particularly for entry-level employees entering into the market. There are premiums for the clean energy technology certifications and training and skills. Clean energy jobs are more likely to offer benefits, and unionization rates are highly correlated with higher wages and increased benefits. Next slide. We also have we've created a pretty robust data set of workforce development activities and training programs across the state. Includes registered apprenticeships. It includes community college and university training programs, other NGO training programs. And what we find is that there's quite a lot of activity around HVAC, very strong engineering programs. And really, we do see quite a lot of alignment with the plans and the goals for New York State. This is also a heat map, so you can see where there's more and less of the clean energy training programs. We also note here that there are 123 training programs that are offered primarily online, which is a quarter of all the programs. So that's great in some ways because it provides a lot of accessibility for folks and a lot of flexibility. But we also note that employers often will say that what's missing most or what they need most is some job site experience. So integrating the online experience with hands-on training and experiential learning is really critical as an objective going forward. Okay, and I'm almost done. Next slide. Just a couple of other notable topics. We did a number of deep dives in this year's report and some spotlights. We looked at heat pump installation, offshore wind, grid modernization, and energy storage. We looked at electrification of transportation and other alternative transportation and workforce development activities in disadvantaged communities. So if those are areas that are you know, particularly of interest to any of you listening today, I want you to know that there are deeper dives in each of those sections in this year's reports. You should definitely check those out. We looked at hiring difficulties, and the results are pre-COVID, but what we're noticing is that, especially in places like New York, the construction sector, where a lot of these jobs are found, has really roared back to life, which means that we think that we're in a position where very soon, if not in some sectors already, we're going to start coming into pre-pandemic levels of hiring difficulty, which is going to create some challenges in terms of making sure we have enough workforce. And then finally, just encourage you to check out the industry profiles on heat pumps and storage, alternative transportation, and workforce development. And we'll be continuing the work with both the forward-looking sort of COVID impacts as well as the work on the 2021 New York Clean Energy Industry Report, which is already underway, and look forward to any comments and questions that you have at the appropriate time. So I think with that, I will turn it back over.
That's me. Am I muted? No, sorry. Thank you, Phil, and thank you to the entire BW team. You know, we appreciate you being here to help lay a foundation for the rest of our discussion today. We're going to skip any Q&A discussion for the moment in the interest of time, but thank you again. It's great information. With that, let's move into our panelist presentations. We have invited the next set of speakers to provide updates on and insights from their efforts related to workforce development, about which we will all benefit from hearing. We'll skip lengthy introductions, but we're excited to have new things to kick off. So please join me in welcoming Amanda Kogut-Rosenau, Vice President of Programs. Over to you, Amanda.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. I'm excited to be here and tell you all about NEW and the work that we're doing here in New York City to forward diversity and inclusion in the workforce. I was particularly excited to talk to this group because, you know, the driving factors of diversity, community, and equity are something that is really, you know, just in NEW's DNA. It is what we exist, you know, to do and what we exist to push forward. So again, I'm really happy to talk to you all about the work that we're doing. Next slide. So just a bit of a background. Our mission is to prepare, train, and place women in careers in skilled construction, utility, and maintenance jobs. You know, these jobs and these careers help women achieve the economic independence and security for themselves and their family. And at the same time, you know, we have the amazing opportunity to provide the qualified pipeline of workers who will continue to build and grow our city. We were founded over 40 years ago, and we're really a groundbreaking model that's proven to work. And we are committed to changing the lives of women and providing the opportunity that they need to move out of poverty. We're really very proud to say that when we began this work 42 years ago, women represented 2% of the construction workforce in New York City, and now they represent 7%. And in the past decade alone, we've placed over 3,000 people in industry careers. Next slide. And then here's just a bit of the breakdown of, you know, the most common places that our graduates end up. So we place about 22% of our graduates with the electricians here in New York City. Carpenters follow, and then laborers, iron workers, sheet metal workers, and plumbers all kind of hit that around 6% mark. The average wage for an individual who finishes our program is about $19 an hour. And if you want to move to the next slide. So NEW is a pre-apprenticeship program. And so what we do is provide our students with the foundational skills that they need, both academically and the hands-on training to make them successful when they enter into an apprenticeship. We are also a New York State Department of Labor direct entry provider, which means that our students can connect to these opportunities in an accelerated way. Which not only allows our women to connect to jobs, but allows labor to really have an additional resource to boost the diversity and inclusion that they're looking to do. As I mentioned, in the last 10 years, we've placed over 3,000 people in these opportunities. We enroll roughly around 350 women a year. We connect with over 150 employers within the space here in New York City. As I mentioned, the average wage is about $19 an hour to start. And we place annually somewhere around 275 people into opportunities. So next slide. So I'm just talk briefly about, you know, the suite of programs that we offer, and then I'll focus a little bit on green collar prep after that. So as I mentioned, NEW is a pre-apprenticeship program, and that is really sort of the core of our mission and what we do. And we do that through now three program offerings, thanks to New York State Department of Labor and NYSERDA and your support. Blue collar prep, NEW at night, and green collar prep. Blue collar prep is really our, you know, our core pre-apprenticeship training program. It's the, what we call the day model. And so it is regular, it's about 7 weeks long, 5 days a week, and is really modeled after what the job site experience is gonna be. So students begin at 7:30 in the morning, they end close to 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Within all of our programs, there's, you know, we've built in very strict and rigid attendance policies, lateness policies, because we really want the experience to mirror what the job is gonna be like for our students. NEW at night is what we call our evening option. And so that's designed for women who are working and want to transition into careers in the trades. And that's three evenings a week, and then all day on Saturdays. And then green collar prep is, you know, our newest offering. And that is really us, you know, green collar prep is our opportunity to look at the work that we're doing and really intentionally integrate sustainability practices and principles into our programming. We also offer young women's initiatives, and this is an opportunity for us to really begin to engage young women and girls at the point in time when they start to think about their careers and expose them to what a career in the building and construction trades could be. And then we also offer a number of advanced trainings, and those could be anything from additional safety certifications for our graduates as they're preparing to enter into an apprenticeship. We have a very successful, rigorous Local 3 test prep program that we offer twice a year. That's one of, you know, and I want to say that's probably why we have 22% of our women successfully connecting into Local 3, because we really, you know, we put them through the paces with math drills, with reading comprehension, so that they are really poised and ready to take that test and to pass. And I'll move on to the next slide. So I'm going to just take a minute and talk about green collar prep. So green collar prep is really part of our overall sustainability strategy to ensure that women are a part of the growing green economy. You know, we have been saying forever, right, internally, right, trades jobs are the greenest jobs. The blue collar industry will be the driving force in greening and reclaiming the environment, not only in New York City, but in New York State. And to that end as well, you know, labor has the history of bringing people together, right, and creating a voice. They are natural builders of community. And we believe that seeding that community, local communities, with people who are knowledgeable and working in this sector, not only help to create the workforce that's going to then build and maintain whatever our new infrastructure is, but it's also the workforce, it's also the individual community members who are gonna be able to educate one another about what these changes might mean, and advocate for really, you know, the best, most sustainable projects and community involvement. The other thing that, you know, we thought about with green collar prep, especially in working with young women, a number of young people really feel passionately about sustainability, but they have no idea how to connect that passion into a career, especially if they're individuals who are excited to use their hands, who are excited to kind of be, you know, outside and really kind of, you know, do the work that tradespeople find to be motivating. And so green collar prep is really a way for those individuals to take that passion and connect it practically to a job. And so beyond the pre-apprenticeship credential, what green collar prep really is also designed to do is provide our graduates with the opportunity to see how the basic concepts in sustainability apply to the work they'll do in the trades. And so that when they enter into that apprenticeship, they really stand out and advance more quickly because they understand the concepts, they know the questions to ask, and they're proactively thinking about all of those things. You know, at NEW, I really like to say in a lot of ways, we're like the helicopter parent, right? I don't want my graduates just to get in, right? I want them to be the standout students. I want them to be the stars. And Green Collar Prep is really designed with that in mind, too, that we are creating really the best apprenticeship candidates that we possibly can, the people that are really poised to understand the industry and to proactively plan their careers to be successful there. And finally, incorporating sustainability into our programs really positions us to provide knowledgeable, trained candidates for local governments, for developers, to really set bold workforce development goals. And so if you want to just move to the next slide. And so in that vein, I'm just going to talk a little bit about our Signature Projects program, which really kind of marries and dovetails beautifully with our training programs. And one of the things we've learned at New over the course of time is it's not just enough to develop the supply. There has to be the demand. Individuals, whether they be developers, government officials, have to demand and have to want diversity in their workforce. And so Signature Projects is designed with that in mind. Through Signature Projects, new partners with different developers to set really bold workforce participation goals. And I say participation goals because what we know from experience is that it's not just being on a job, it's the hours that you're on a job. Right, that is how individuals learn and grow, and an apprenticeship model really works effectively. And so through our Signature Projects program, developers make a commitment to trying to achieve a certain number of workforce participation hours, and New is there to help them strategize and think about that. And also, because we do have a direct entry status, we are a source for developers or apprenticeship partners of candidates if for some reason or another they don't have enough women who are able to enter into the workforce. They can partner with New and we can provide them with those candidates at the ready. And now with Green Collar Prep, we can also provide them with candidates who have the basic knowledge of sustainability practices and the interest and the desire to work on those projects. And over the course of time, we've had about 60 projects across New York City. And you can see here just to the right, I gave you an example. So the Delta Terminal at LaGuardia Airport was a new Signature Project. We've also recently been in, we're working up also on the Delta Terminal at JFK. They just topped off One Vanderbilt a few months ago. And so those are just some examples of Signature Projects that we've worked on across the New York City area. And also really, as we're talking about, again, wanting to have representation and inclusion within our workforce, and really connecting the people that make up our communities to these opportunities, it's important that we remember to ask. It's important that we not only commit to the goal, but that we ask ourselves if we're working to achieve the goal. And so New is here not only to give you those workers, but also to remind you to ask and to help you achieve what it is that you're desiring and wanting to achieve. And so if you want to move to the next slide, just a bit about who's eligible for our program. So somebody must be 18 years or older. They have to be eligible to work in the U.S. We do require a high school diploma or an equivalency, and that can be that's also we take international credentials as well for people that are new Americans. Obviously, you have to be interested in hands-on training, and you have to really want and feel passionately about a job in the construction and building industry. We welcome women, transgender, and non-binary individuals to register with us. And the first steps to enrolling are, attending one of our online information sessions. And you can do, anybody who's interested can do that by going online at this point in time and registering with us. And those are kind of the first steps. And then last slide. So here's my information. But anybody who's interested in partnering with New, and whether that is through a Signature Project, whether that is through figuring out how you can refer your clients and your candidates, thinking about how you might want to start something similar in your own community, or just collaborate with us in any way, please, please, please. We welcome all sorts of partnerships and all sorts of ideas. My contact information is there, so you can reach out to me at any time.
Well, thank you, Amanda. That was a really great presentation. We really appreciate your perspective on these issues, the perspective your organization brings. And, you know, obviously, the Department of Labor works very closely with your organization. We're very proud to be part of your work. It's a great opportunity for young women in the city and the state. So let's move right along to our next presenters, James and Michaela from 32BJ. Take it away, team.
Hello, good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for giving us the time to tell you about our program and also some of our work with NYSERDA. My name is James Barry. I'm the Senior Manager of Program Development at the Thomas Shortman Training Fund, and I'll be presenting alongside with Michaela Boren, who is the Manager of Green Programs at the Fund. If you have any questions or you wanted to contact us to follow up, we'll have our contact information. And feel free to do that. You can have the next slide, please. Next, here's the contact. So I thought I'd give you a little background. The training fund is what's called a joint labor management partnership. So we're basically a school for 32BJ union members. And this is paid for by the employers. So all of our students are incumbent workers. They're all, you know, currently working. And we train them to perform better in their jobs and prepare for positions higher up the career ladder. So it's similar to a health benefit that's paid for by an employer, except the benefit in this case is education. So the members attend classes on their own time, and it's free of charge to them. Occasionally, we also do some compliance-based stuff around workplace harassment, OSHA, or if there's something that's particularly valuable to an employer, if they want to do it for every staff person, we might do that on company time. So for instance, we're doing a lot of COVID safety training right now. Our courses range from English as a second language to basic industry courses such as electricity, carpentry, plumbing, and then more advanced heating, air conditioning, refrigeration. And we've been doing a lot of work in green building and energy efficiency, and have 25 courses in that area as well. Can have the next slide, please. So the members, I mentioned it's a joint labor management partnership. So the labor portion is 32BJ SEIU, and the union represents 175,000 members across 12 states and DC. So in the New York area, metropolitan area, there's about 60,000 of those members, so it's pretty dense here. And the members work as building superintendents, handy persons, door persons, maintenance workers, security window cleaners, food service workers, in a variety of settings. So it could be residential, commercial, and other types of like we have higher education as well. So it kind of varies across the regions, but pretty much anything having to do with building services, we're somehow involved with those positions. Next slide, please. So we've been funded by NYSERDA in some form for about 15 years now. We can move on to the next slide. So we started with several small grants. So this was maybe like 2004 or so. Green buildings were kind of new. At least there were USB GBC chapters, but it was kind of a new concept. So we were trying to bring that into our training fund and sort of working to educate both the members and in some cases the employers as well. So we partnered with NYSERDA on several small grants to do green building training with a third-party vendor, which was Stephen Winter Associates. And then we also started doing some LEED for existing building seminars. So as we developed more in-house expertise, then we were looking for larger programs and really to incorporate them and just make them a regular ongoing feature of our programs. So what I thought, we could do is just provide a summary of the programs that NYSERDA helped us with and give you an idea of the types of things that could be funded. So we can move on to the, oh, actually we can stay on this because I'll just go through each one. So the first is BMS training. So these are the more recent programs that we've been doing. So one of the most effective ways that a building can increase efficiency in its mechanical systems on operations and maintenance is to really to purchase and utilize a building maintenance system to control HVACs, lighting, electricity. So we thought it's important that we would have to provide and sort of, as an industry, look at skilling up people to just have understanding of what a BMS system is and to have some basic skills so that when they go into a building and they're going to encounter a variety of programs, a variety of vendors, but they would just have general basic knowledge about what these systems can do and the types of features, functionality, and best practices. So we wanted to, you know, allow people, there's typically vendor training, but we wanted to make sure that they had a full understanding of the basics so that they're just in a better position to use all the functionality. Typically with a lot of building equipment, sometimes people want to invest in that and then they get really expensive high-tech equipment, but if the operators can't use it, it's just not used. It's not going to give them what they thought they were going to get from that as far as efficiency goals. So we feel like it's our responsibility to make sure people are trained in that. The reason we approached NYSERDA for this, we had a previous course, and what we did was kind of provide a survey of different types of systems people are going to see. So we partnered with communication systems. There's a company called BuildingLink, which is kind of like Outlook for building residents and workers, and they could do work tickets. So we did that, and we created a virtual building, and you know that worked well. And some of the other stuff around BMS was more show and tell, which, you know, it's nice to see it if you're in the classroom, that's fine, but you can't interact with a live building management system. You'd be turning the heat on and off in a building. So we really wanted to figure out a way that we could develop virtual buildings. So we worked with NYSERDA and a vendor to create three virtual buildings. And basically you see that picture of, it looks like a white board on the upper left-hand side. And these are building sensors or control sensors. And those are connected to software and laptops that the students use in the classroom. So we have three boards and four students at any given time could work on the boards. And we would just run scenarios. So, you know, if you see the temperature going up in a particular area, you know, what would you need to do? How would you troubleshoot that area? So we created scenarios, we built out the software, we created the boards, and it's really been a very successful program. And we've trained close to about 120 students now, and it's a three-trimester class, so it's basically a year. And it's something that we've been getting more and more demand for, so that was extremely helpful to be able to receive funding for that. Another program was the Green Supers on site. So supers meaning, again, superintendents. And this was really a follow-up to a larger program we had through the Department of Labor. And that program was classroom-based, and it was around certifications for, you know, BPI certifications. We had an Urban Green certificate. But what we wanted to do this time was to really customize it to the buildings. So it was less of a classroom approach. And the way it worked is we would have an instructor go to a building, walk through and identify, and also speak with the managers and identify what would be the energy conservation measures that would be like the biggest bang for the buck in that building. So once we did that, then we would do training on how, what are the things that the members could do? Could they implement those projects? And we would focus on those projects and train them in that. After, we would look at speaking to the managers because they would have to supervise that work in the long run. So for instance, if we said we wanted to include a logging program so that people make general rounds and maybe they use an app to do logging. We would want to make sure that the managers knew about that, that they knew how to follow up with it, and create a plan for them. And then we would come back later and follow up, assist with troubleshooting issues, and provide further training. So that is an ongoing program. And obviously with COVID, it's been a little difficult because no one really wants to have people coming into their buildings. It's not totally necessary, but it's something we've worked with a lot of buildings up in the Bronx, in Queens, and we're looking to do more once sort of it's easier to get back into buildings. And then finally, there's another program we had that we funded was around curriculum development. So there's a certification called, it's a Building Performance Institute certification called the Multifamily Building Analyst. And it's pretty challenging. It was pretty heavy on the math. It involved knowing a lot of background information before taking the course. So we really wanted to develop curriculum that was very engaging, that had great illustrations, that had detailed lesson plans for the instructors and student manuals. So we laid out a plan to work with subject matter experts, illustrators. We did some how-to videos and really also developed some props that would help people really prepare for the course, but also be prepared to then implement some of the energy conservation measures that would come out of that. So it was one of the props that we developed that was really effective was a roof fan maintenance prop where people could look at changing belt speeds. And it's something that you can't really do unless you're in a building, but it's also, there's, you know, lockout, tag out, and there's all these issues that if you could just kind of bring it into a classroom, it's a lot safer, a lot easier. So that was something we were able to do. And the how-to videos, so really streamline how-to, kind of what you would need to do kind of in the moment. So that's just an overview. And what I'm going to do now is just hand off to Michaela Boren, who's the manager of Green Programs, and she'll talk about some of the training approaches and the models that we use.
Yes, thank you, James. Before Michaela kicks off, I do want to say, in order to provide time for our commenters, we're going to just need to wrap this up in the next minute or two. Thank you.
Okay, understood. So everybody, good afternoon. For our training approaches and models, what really drives it is having a student-centered teaching, understanding that everybody learns differently or tests differently. So next slide, please. And as mentioned earlier, we really try to focus on hands-on. And one of the things that I want to highlight is how when we have field trips, we really want to try and have scavenger hunts where they have a piece of paper, look for the device, and write it down. So it's not just a matter of just a regular field trip, but really trying to get in there and learning what's happening. So next slide, please. This is an example of our green air sealing course. We start with the principles of air sealing or air movement. One of the things that I wanted to point it out is how we actually use cardboard boxes. We make holes, we put in a tube, and then we give the students the equipment for air sealing and just let them go have at it, air seal. And then like we do a before and after prior knowledge, this is how they would air seal. And then later on after class, air seal again and see what happens. So we're able to save the boxes that we get from book deliveries instead of using wooden equipment. So that's one of the ways we can reuse. Next slide, please. One of the things that we really wanted to highlight is that for members who do not have laptops or have low technology skills, we started having courses on cell phones or mobile apps. So we have around 23 courses that you can do on your cell phone, from workplace harassment to ESL. And for courses that do require field trips but due to COVID or due to certain challenges, we've invested in 360 videos, which we put on YouTube, and then the students can just easily scroll up, down, left, right, and as if they were inside a room. So we're also hoping to go more into 360 and virtual videos down the line. Next slide, please. And we've noticed that to really encourage more students who may not have laptops or emails or just are not comfortable techie-wise, sending them text messages or text message campaigns actually makes a big difference. And, you know, being, you know, as diverse as we are, to be able to offer this communication in four different languages, the same with safety and compliance courses, because health and safety first, so we do offer them in other languages as well. Next slide, please. And this is just our last topic, where we just wanted to share Wilfredo's story, how he moved up as a doorman and has taken classes throughout with us. So he would, you know, he had a goal of moving up. He would take a class, learn something, go back, apply, be inspired, come back, take class, move up. So he's had that story ever since 2010, which has inspired him to become an instructor. And he has moved on to larger and higher end buildings. He's also one of our students and instructors who's usually prefer hands-on, but due to COVID, you know, is adjusting to online, but he's also seeing the pros and cons of having online classes. So I agree with what was said earlier about trying to figure out that balance between being online and able to reach more students, but at the same time, put in that hands-on ability into the course. And that's it for our presentation.
Thank you, James, and thank you, Michaela, and, you know, to the entire 32BJ team. I think I saw my own photo on one of those slides at the BMS. It was a great opportunity to see your work in action, so thank you for hosting me and for all the work that you're doing. So let's continue right along by introducing our next panelist presenter, Tanya Gale from Green City Force. Over to you, Tanya.
Thank you, everybody. Hi, I'm really happy to be here. I'm going to move through these slides fairly quickly to adjust time, but next slide, please. Green City Force is a model that's tied to national service. We're an AmeriCorps program. Next slide, please. Where we focus intentionally on trying to create a generation of young leaders to power a green economy that's inclusive through national service. Next slide, please. We focus our work and service within the over 500,000 person community of public housing in New York City across the five boroughs, and we have a dual impact of addressing the needs of individual young adults 18 to 24, as well as the major climate action goals that are tied to this gigantic footprint of real estate and carbon emissions in New York City. Next slide, please. And so our frame is from two perspectives. We have an arm that's the beginning of our model, which is a service corps. We connect with 18 to 24 year old young adults living in public housing. The requirement is that they have completed some high school credential, and we engage them in national service. And it's a pre-apprenticeship level program because they're working in teams together to build their skills, gain exposure with the idea of not just a green job, but a career pathway within green economy sector. And so the other half of our model is really about support for our alumni through a variety of factors, which I'll explain more going forward. Next slide, please. So this is an image of our journey map. So on the far left, we've got public housing communities where we recruit teams of young adults. Through recruitment and orientation, they work in teams to build workforce skills, eco-literacy, a range of exposure to sustainability initiatives. And because they're in AmeriCorps as service members, they spend 80% of their time with us directly engaging in major iconic service initiatives such as urban agriculture, farm building management, where we produce over 100,000 pounds of food for public housing community members, where they're the workforce arm, We have done a series of various types of energy efficiency, composting, recycling initiatives deployed as teams in service throughout NYCHA. And 20% of the time that they're with us as service members, they're gaining technical skills, whether it be GPRO or training specific to OSHA or the tracks that they're going to go on to beyond their service term with us. And then when they complete their service, they're then an alumni. And on the far right, you'll see that yellow circle there. And we'll deploy them into a number of various job opportunities through partnerships that we have, from emerging opportunities that are tied to the career paths that are going to make it possible for these traditionally left out communities to gain access to good jobs. Next slide, please. So we have a proven approach in terms of the success rate of over 80% of folks completing our program in the past 10 years, over 500 graduates. Our wage average is historically, I believe, around $16.50 an hour pre the requirement of $15 an hour in New York State. And then our placement, which is our long-term goal, has been historically 83% 6 months after they complete our program as service members. Next slide, please. The bulk of our placements have been tied within energy and buildings. You see some examples of the different roles we've had. Again, through support from NYSERDA and others, we look to build continued engagement and advanced training for service mode as opportunities arrive and their skills become stronger. These are some examples of the roles that we place graduates in historically. Next slide, please. And this is a broader range. You can see the bulk of the percent, as I said, has been in energy efficiency, but we're really trying to be intentional about what are the emerging jobs. So, you know, as was spoken earlier, in this past year, we've been talking a lot more about HVAC opportunities, e-mobility, and other emerging roles that are becoming more and more prominent as opportunities for employment. Next slide, please. So in our community of graduates, we're really looking to keep connected to them. And so looking for them to have next steps beyond what they have, whether it's an initial job placement, whether it's our social enterprise, which I'll address in a moment, or whether they're emerging sectors so that they can be building on the knowledge that they have and they can continue to progress ultimately from this pre-apprenticeship mode of us to then a pre-apprenticeship opportunity, ideally into good jobs, whether they're union jobs or other jobs, but building their skills along the way with support and partnership from us and our other workforce partners, including you, by the way, which we're really happy to be part of the Green Economy Network with. Next slide, please. We can see sometimes we place folks with a team of employers, individuals. We work with examples such as Franklin Energy. We work with Build Down in the past. And so we look to build relationships with employer partners so we can understand what success looks like and be intentional about supporting the graduate retention, but also training towards where we know opportunities are going to be in the present and future state, with the lens of racial equity always at the forefront of how we message and partner. Next slide, please. So we also have a component that's a social enterprise piece where we created opportunities to be an employer ourselves because we had a number of graduates that had trained for placement. And because of investments in NYCHA for energy retrofits, there were rules around why we could not place our service members as government-funded programs to partner with this work. So next slide. So what we did was we created a model where we brought back our graduates and we hired them to support that work we did in place-based focused work around the retrofit. So we're literally building next steps with graduates as they complete their baseline training with us. And as opportunities and partnerships come, we look to not only generate revenue, but get additional training platforms for them to build their skills ultimately to go into long-term permanent career tracks at a higher level. Next slide, please. This is an example of one of our graduates, Earlton. He was a service member, and then when he graduated, he went into our social enterprise and was able to then build skills and eventually partner in we had a pilot construction training in partnership with NYCHA, where he got to get credentials to have access into a union opportunity. So he's an example of, you know, a successful career pathway graduate, and that's what we like to see happen on a broader scale for more of our program participants. Next slide, please. Marquis similarly has been placed with one of our long-term partners And for, I believe, 5 years, he was continually advancing in his role there, still connected to GCF, but working individually as an employee. And because of our partnership with the employer, we were in real time trying to understand how to support his success and build opportunities for others to come after him in jobs following his placement. Next slide. We also have historically done a lot of work around solar. It's ebbed and flowed in New York State, as we know, but you know, we're always looking. Currently, I believe we have two partnerships for solar projects that are demonstration partnerships in collaboration with profit and nonprofit partners across NYCHA. And so this is work that's also part of our portfolio as the opportunities emerge for placements. Next slide. And our funding model is really trying to build a pipeline of those service members, our service core, so that we can have intentional platforms for a wide range of sustainability jobs. So a third of our funding is federally covered through AmeriCorps. We receive approximately a third through city and state. We've had historic great investment and partnership with NYSERDA as an example, where they're really intentional about our platform across the beginning of our engagement with young people from recruitment through the career pathways. And some examples of those are funding they've provided for us to have energy and service that lead to internship opportunities, that lead to career jobs, other positions like energy boot camp, where we had dedicated training past the service term that we knew was going to equip our graduates to be more prepared and competitive for the next stage jobs. And so that's been a really important model of support for us. In addition, multi-year support where we can plan intentionally to build a broader pool of young people having the training opportunities and be aspirational about ready for placement in the jobs that are coming going forward. And then about a third of our work in the service corps is covered by private, institutional, corporate, and individual funding. And then again, through the innovative social enterprise, there's a lot of contract opportunities which are harder to sort of keep as a consistent basis for longer term planning, but that's a new iterative, innovative part of our shop that we're looking to strengthen to make sure it continues to have pathways for good jobs as well as sustainable revenue to support our work. Next slide, please. So again, NYSERDA as a great partner and example of how going forward, I think programs like ours need investment. It's about priority populations to address the issue of equity in the CLCPA and to also understand how, you know, over time, it's not just a job that gets us to our targets, but really a long-term view and a partnership and strategizing like a way forward. And so we really value that relationship that we have. Next slide. And I am our executive director, but my colleague, Ara Marcel, is our Alumni Training Advancement Manager, who is primary point for a lot of our NYSERDA partnership as well as our employer partnership. So I welcome everyone to reach out to either or both of us with follow-up. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Tanya, and to the entire Green City Force team. We're, of course, incredibly appreciative of your partnership and leadership in this respect as well. So let's keep it going. I couldn't agree with you more, but I do appreciate the overview and the presentation today and for your willingness to share your experience and expertise with this audience as well. So as we wrap up the panelists, let's continue to our final panelist presenter, Alan Marzullo from Local IBEW 43. I believe, Alan, you'll be skipping any slides, so let's hold the slide here, and please take it away.
Thank you, President Harris and Commissioner Reardon, for having me and allowing me to speak a little bit about what we're doing here in upstate New York at Local 43 IBEW. Again, my name is Al Marzullo. I'm the business manager and financial secretary for IBEW Local 43 in snowy Syracuse, New York. We cover 11 different counties in upstate New York. This year is our 125th year, so we're 125 years old. We have over 1,200 plus members and 200 plus apprentices. The wages for our apprentices starting at a first year wage is $28.72 with benefits, down to a fifth year apprentice at $58.17 again with benefits. I will also share our journey person wage is $67.11 currently again with benefits. So our apprenticeship program is a five-year day school program. Our apprentices come to school once a week for 8 hours, and they work in the field for 32 hours with our signatory electrical contractors. We have over 60-plus electrical contractors under the banner of our partner, NECA, which is the National Electrical Contractors Association. In our apprenticeship program, we teach all aspects of the electrical industry, as well as any cutting-edge electrical technology. With the help from our grant writers and NYSERDA, we've been able to secure funding for training our students in clean energy technology in microgrid, charging stations, battery storage, solar and wind, and that's just to name a few. Our apprentices go through over 320 hours of competency-based book work training, as well as over 8,000 OJT hours in their 5 years while working with our signatory contractors. A few other points of emphasis we are working on is our collaborative efforts with area colleges like MVCC, Mohawk Valley Community College. We work with MVCC to secure an MOA, Memorandum of Understanding, with the college to matriculate course credit for our students. So when they come out of our training program, they will also graduate from MVCC with an AOS degree as an electrical service technician without any cost to the apprentice in Local 43. We're also working with the Syracuse City School District. We have created an electrical tech program within the school district itself, and the students in that program, as they complete the program, are given direct opportunity to our apprenticeship program. We're also working with NABTU, the North American Building Trades Union, to implement now the MC3 curriculum, which is the multi-craft core curriculum within the school district as well. The program is now going in front of New York State Ed for their final approval, and this will allow apprenticeship opportunities through NABTU, not just for the electrical trade, but for all trades. Finally, we're working with the city of Syracuse and its mayor and the county executive of Onondaga County, as well as Onondaga County, in developing an ARP, Apprentice Readiness Program, a pathway to apprenticeship for local residents using the same MC3 model we're using with the Syracuse City School District, focusing on women, people of color, and transitioning our veterans to gain access to building trade registered apprenticeship programs. So that's a little bit about what we're doing here at IBEW Local 43 and forging forward with the new technologies and green technologies, and also partnering with our area leaders to create better opportunities in our community. So that's a little bit about the program, and I will turn it back over to President Harris. Thank you.
Thank you. I think I grab it at this point. So please join me in a silent and virtual round of applause for all of our presenters. I don't know, wave your hands or whatever. You all did a great job. It's wonderful to see all of you. And it's interesting because you all have different ways of approaching this particular problem. So it's great to see all the work that you're doing. I know I came away from these presentations with thoughts flowing and a lot of questions. Hopefully the same is true for members of the public who are tuning in with us, because now we're going to do, for the first time, we're going to pivot to an open public comment session portion of today's meeting. I will be passing things off to Farah Anderson in a moment to facilitate the Q&A. But I want to set the stage with a few comments and reminders. So next slide, there we go. First, a reminder of the framing questions that we put out there in the announcement of today's meeting. Please use these as prompts for your comments and feedback. Any and all workforce-related input is welcome, in particular on these questions. And these are the framing questions right here. Next, we ask attendees to register in advance to provide comments during this portion of the meeting. So we'll be working our way through this pre-registered list of speakers first. We're then hoping that we'll have time remaining to take input from other attendees today who did not have a chance to pre-register. Farah will be explaining the mechanics of how to indicate your interest if we do have sufficient time.
For all of our commenters, both pre-registered and signing up today, we'd ask you to follow a few simple ground rules. Please, of course, be courteous of your fellow attendees' time by limiting your comments to no longer than 2 minutes, and of course, preferably shorter. Please make sure your remarks are respectful and appropriate for this public forum, aiming to be constructive and supportive as much as possible. Listen closely to the logistical WebEx instructions from Farah. We'll be helping orchestrate the queue of pre-registered speakers and then day of signups, time allowing. So with that, we can stay on this slide with the framing questions, and I will pass it to Farah so that we can begin the public input.
Great. Thanks so much, Commissioner Reardon. Can everyone hear me?
Yes.
Great. Thank you. Well, wonderful. With that framing, I think wanted to just remind people on the technical side, we did have several registrants ahead of time, and I will be reading your name off the list. Many of you have indeed, we can see you on the attendee list. There's a few of you that we cannot. And if that is the case, I will just read your name to be safe that you are not dialed in by phone or in on another name, but we will charge forth. So, and then time allowing, we will see if there's the ability to allow for others to sign up in real time, and we'll explain in more detail, but at a high level, if there is time for that, we would ask that you put your name in the Q&A function that is available within the participants tab of your WebEx, and that way we can add you to the queue. So with that, I'm going to launch in and start naming those that have signed up. You will have 2 minutes. We will try to warn you at 1 minute and 30 via WebEx, but as noted, if you wrap up your comments more quickly, that is will allow us to get to more of the signups. So the first person, I'm not seeing you on the list, but Laura Jean Davignon from Interstate Renewable Energy Council, just seeing in case you were on a different name. Okay. And then the next one also, seeing that you might not have joined under that name, just checking, Antoine Cannon with Golden Energy Solutions. Any chance that we have you under a different name or a phone number? Okay. And then the next one that we know, we did see you online, is Elliot Cresswell. So Elliot, we will be, and I should know this for everyone, we will be promoting you to a panelist for the 2 minutes that you are speaking, and that will allow you to be heard by everyone on the line. So we will just take a moment here to ensure that you are raised up, and then your 2 minutes will begin as soon as we can hear you. So Elliot Cresswell, do we have you? Can we hear you?
Elliot, you can unmute now.
Okay, just checking. Is audio okay?
Yes.
Yes. Fantastic.
Wonderful.
All right, your 2 minutes begin now. Thanks, Elliot.
Thank you. We really appreciate the opportunity to contribute and just a wonderful, rigorous conversation, checking a lot of the boxes that we pay attention to at WDI. Again, representing Workforce Development Institute today. I just had a couple comments and then just generally want to reinforce the spate of questions. Those are ones that we pay very close attention to at WDI, so I'm keen to hear other voices on it. And I appreciate the way Phil Jordan and his shop kind of frame things up in the space that NYSERDA has allowed them to explore and define these areas. We are constantly sort of defining and refining what clean energy is. And so the main takeaway I think we wanted to contribute today was that just to emphasize the importance of continuing the evolution of our understanding of clean energy jobs from being sort of in the olden days, these were brand new jobs with brand new skills and brand new titles. And I'm pleased to see the evolution moving to include some of those new ones, but really a refocus attention on the fact that so much of this work is carried out by people in occupations with skill sets that already exist in our economy. And I'll go back a few slides. I'm sorry, I forget the presentation, but I saw building porters and handymen and handy people being included on those. And those were some titles that many years ago in clean energy work wouldn't have gotten the prominence that they get today. So an appreciation that those folks, even though they may not be as seductive as a solar installer or an offshore wind technician, play just as important a role in rounding out the clean energy economy. And I'll just end with this in that there's a continued push among us and our partners and all of our staff to continue to try to close the gap, particularly around offshore wind. We've worked very closely with NYSERDA and appreciate their support and foresight on this. And we're just continually looking to close the gap between what this industry is going to need over the next 1 year, 3 years, 20 years, and the sort of preparedness exercises happening at the school level, in the supply chain, among the building trades, and so on. And so I think some of the models that we saw here today, the pre-apprenticeships, the Green City Force, those sorts of things, they hold loads of promise. And so we look forward to continuing to connect with those kinds of partners. And again, appreciate the leadership of DOL and NYSERDA on these issues, and look forward to hearing from the rest of the participants. Thank you.
Thank you. Great. A couple of quick notes before we move on. One is just apologize. I'm apologizing in advance for mispronouncing anybody's name. We only have written format, just certainly not intentional. And then secondly, if you are on the line and we are not able to recognize you based on the name that you signed in through, just please write to us in the Q&A function on the WebEx, and we will circle back to you. Just let us know what the name is that you are signed up actually on the WebEx under, so that we can elevate you and move forward that way. So the next person on our list is Christine Sloan from the National Offshore Wind Research and Development Consortium. So Christine Sloan, we are going to elevate you now and begin your 2 minutes. Do we have you yet, Christine?
Christine Sloan is not on the line.
Ah, okay. All right, that was somebody that did not show up. We will circle back to her if she does. The next person is Marjana Isapur from Farmingdale State College. So, Marjana, we should be able to have you elevated momentarily.
Yes, you can unmute now. Marjana, you have the ability to unmute now.
Can you all hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Great. All right. Thank you. Your 2 minutes begin now.
So, hello, everyone. Thank you for this opportunity to, first of all, fabulous presentation by everyone. Very interested to look a closer look at the study on your website. I just want to address, I'm looking at all the framing questions here, and I have something to say about every single one of them, but I want to focus on two things which I see as a challenge. I've been working with the workforce training in the renewable energy in the space since really 2007, starting with solar and $1 million solar roof initiative by Department of Energy. One of the things I see, there's many opportunities with respect to with the new policies in the whole green space. I want to kind of focus my comment on offshore wind a little bit, and that is that we do hear, governor's announcement, 2,500 jobs. I just want to emphasize that those are not new jobs which require all new skills. I know there would be a good percentage of people from the old fossil fuel industry workers that have the existing skills that we are working to bring, on board. And in terms of what we work to actually bring the new workforce and changing the demographic, I think the pre-apprenticeship models that we saw presented here by a few of the organizations in New York City New and Green City Force in particular are fantastic models for to kind of bring people from specifically disadvantaged community on board, but to really do more of a thorough job in terms of exactly how many of those 2,500 jobs are actually newly created jobs, I think a study needs to be undertaken, which I hope that our Children Training Institute will do. What we're doing at Farmingdale State College, we're building two programs. We're building one as a teacher apprenticeship, very similar to the models that have been mentioned here. And we are also focusing.
Margina? Yes. Sorry to wrap you up. Would you mind wrapping up in the next few seconds or a bit over time?
Sure. Sorry about that. If you're interested to know exactly what we're doing with, in the offshore wind space, please look us up at Farmingdale State College and look for RESC, REST. But I would be more than happy and glad to talk about models, training models, that if we do need to scale them up, they could replicate them on demand. That this is something that's very doable, has happened in the onshore wind industry down south, and we can certainly replicate those models. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Great. The next person on the list, and we have a few that we have your name listed, so I'm going to name them, and if you are all on the line, or if any of you are on the line, please just note in the Q&A function for us. So the first is Liz Thomas from Urban Green Council. The next is Johnny Norton from Fomit Insulation. The next is Max Levitsky from Solar One. Next is Robert Taylor from Youth Action, East Build East Harlem. And the next is several people from Workforce Development Institute. We have Gregory Hart and David Goodness and Dan Cullen. I'm just going to continue to name these because there's a few more before we get to someone that we've identified that clearly is on the line. But please do note for us in the chat if you are actually on under a different name. Cynthia Brown from Siemens, Cricket, Thomas O'Dell from Workforce Development Institute, Jennifer Garvey from ORCID, Maddie Arasich from Building and Construction Trades Council, Nina Shaw Gianaris from Nassau Community College, and Kayla Wilson from RETI Center. So if any of you are on, please let us know. The next person who we have identified, we can see you on the line, is Soli Shin. From GARP. So Soli, we will be elevating you in just a moment, and remember to unmute yourself so that we can hear you and begin your couple of minutes. So Soli, do we have you yet?
Soli, you should have the ability to unmute now.
Soli, if we're not seeing that you're able to unmute yourself momentarily, we will move to the next person and circle back to you. But I just want to give it one more moment to see if you are able to unmute yourself. Okay. Not hearing from Soli yet. We will move to the next person. So the next person that is on the list is Jeffrey Katz from Green Home Logic. Let us know if you have joined under a different name. Amber Hughes from Workforce Development. We see that you had joined. So Amber Hughes, we will try to elevate you now so that we can hear from you. And we'll let you know then when your couple of minutes can begin.
You can go ahead, Amber. Amber, it looks like you have unmuted, but we can't hear you. Perhaps you may need to...
Muted. Yeah. Thanks, everyone, for bearing with us doing this in the virtual world. It's certainly a bit challenging, we understand. Amber, if we can't hear you in just a moment, I am going to continue on as the next person to actually take a quick moment to see if Soli is able to speak. I don't know if Soli, you were... Oh, wait, I have perhaps some background noise coming from Amber. Is that...
Hi.
Can you try
speaking?
Okay.
Yeah, so I think these training programs are great, and I really like the term green collar. I think that's a really great classification of new jobs for the green economy.
Great. Is that, we will certainly note that in the comments. Is there anything else that you wanted to add? Couple of minutes, otherwise we'll move to the next person.
No, that's all I had to say.
Wonderful, thank you. All right, so let's come back and continue down with the list. Again, there's several that we, I will just read your names, let us know if you are in fact on under a phone or a different name. So David Whipple from Empire State Development, Mark Duva from Molecular Glasses, Inc., Desiree Ugarte from Siemens, Diane Gonzalez from Association for Energy Affordability. I think this might be Bob Callender from TRC, Richard Reeder from Stony Brook University. So those are the list of people we don't see on yet. The next person that we do see on is Jennifer Schneider from EBU. So if you are able to begin unmuting yourself, we should be able to elevate you here momentarily, Jennifer, and look forward to your input.
Jennifer, you can unmute and speak now. Jennifer, you can unmute and speak now. Jennifer Schneider.
And if not, we can move on and circle back to Jennifer at the same time as we circle back to others. I think there's a couple that we totally as well we can circle back to at the end in case their unmutes are able to work. The next person is Ed Hill Jr. from International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. Ed Hill, we're going to try to elevate you here as we speak, and we'll look forward to your comments. Letting you know that you are...
Hi.
Perfect. We can hear you. Your 2 minutes begins now. Thanks, Ed.
All right, thanks. I won't cover 2 minutes. I didn't have any particular questions or anything, but I did want to make a comment that it's wonderful to see this event being put together. There's huge opportunities going forward over the next few years. And certainly my organization, IBEW, as Alan Marzullo had expressed, is in good position, I think, to help get some transition and folks available for the workforce. We're gonna need to make this transition to a renewable energy baseline. And we're looking forward to it. Great organizations to work with. Together we can make it happen. So thank you for involving me.
Thank you. All right. The next person that we have listed is Josh Stubon from GE Renewable Energy. Not seeing you on the line, but let us know if you have joined. David Heppenstall from Association for Energy Affordability. You are up. and we will just be elevating you here as well.
David, you can speak now. David, you can unmute and speak now.
Okay, we'll just give it a moment here, and if not, continue forth. Okay, David, not hearing you come through yet. For the sake of time, we will continue on. The next person that we have listed is Sharon G. Not seeing you on the line, but Sharon, if you are on, let us know. Michael Mager, from Multiple Interveners, if you are on, we will be elevating you currently and look forward to your input. Mm-hmm. While we're doing that, actually, just to give the rest of those we have now, many that we see are on the line. I will just kind of read your name so that you are aware of that you will be coming in the queue. Pat Malone, Dwayne Norris, Sarah Eccles, Kate Krug, Kathleen Culhane, Joanna Altman-Smith, and Adam Flint. You are all on our list, and so we will continue charging forth in that order. So back over to Michael Mager. Are you able to unmute yourself?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Great. Your 3 minutes begins now.
Thank you. Our comments are really focused on maintaining existing jobs in New York State, including manufacturing jobs. Multiple Interveners is an association of approximately 60 large industrial, commercial, and institutional energy consumers with manufacturing and other facilities located throughout New York State. As large consumers of electricity in New York, Multiple Intervener members are subject to state decarbonization policies and pay substantial energy-related costs. Our members support the goals of the CLCPA, and many of our members have taken and continue to take aggressive actions to reduce greenhouse gases through increased energy efficiency efforts, the purchase of renewable power and attributes, and modified operations that incorporate renewable technologies. Multiple Interveners would like to work with the council and the working groups and ensure that the CLCPA is implemented as transparently and cost-effectively as possible, while ensuring that reliability of electric and natural gas systems are maintained. Although fully supportive of CLCPA goals, many members of Multiple Interveners are concerned about the unknown impacts of CLCPA compliance on the overall cost and reliability of energy supplies in New York State. Because of the uncertainty of the impacts of CLCPA compliance, we would like to ensure that the definition of what is considered an energy-intensive, trade-exposed industry entity should be focused on preventing economic or emissions leakage to the greatest extent possible in order to protect manufacturing jobs, as well as supporting research, development, and engineering jobs in the state. Toward that end, as a starting point, the definition of energy-intensive trade-exposed industries should seek to at least incorporate all energy-intensive and or emissions-intensive industries that are trade-exposed and would have been included under previously attempted or past regulations that defined EITE industries. NYSERDA staff has identified several sets of legislation from which to draw, including the Federal Cap and Trade Standard of the 2009 American Clean Energy and Security Act, the Energy Independence and Security Act of 2007, California's Cap and Trade Regulation, the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act of 2019, and the Climate Action Rebate Act of 2019. A proposed definition could use as a base the industries covered by these prior pieces of legislation. Thank you for the opportunity to comment, and we may submit written comments that are a little more expanded. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you, Michael. Next on the list, we have Pat Malone from Stony Brook University. Pat, we will be elevating you momentarily, and you'll be able to speak and share your comments shortly.
Pat, you can unmute now and share your comments.
Hi, how are you? Thank you so much for your patience. Thank you all for a great overview and presentation. There are just a couple of key things here that I would address. I'm with Stony Brook University in both workforce and professional development and economic development, and working closely with the team at Farmingdale for the Offshore Wind Training Institute implementation plan. So it's a pleasure to work with NYSERDA and the Department of Labor and several of the partners in our mutual objectives in raising up this industry sector. Number one, I would like to point out the presentation that included the connectivity to the trades in a credit-bearing program at Mohawk Valley Community College. I think this is an example we need to look at more and more as we professionalize the continuum of education and pathways to create a robust workforce with recognizable skill sets. I also feel very strongly, having just been on a manufacturing workforce subcommittee, that integrating some of those transferable skills, as we mentioned earlier, and making sure that we sort of pivot so that individuals can learn skills that they can move in the supply and demand market is a critical imperative for us. And we welcome an opportunity to use some of our best practices in manufacturing and other areas to do the same. I also would like to point out the ongoing need for supply and demand information shared amongst our entire ecosystem so we can be more agile in how we reposition people that are going through training and make those connections to employment much more robust and focused. And the third piece in the area of diversity and opportunity and inclusiveness, the program in New York City is really to be commended for the work that they have done with women. And I would like to suggest that we create some strategies to create mentorship models for those individuals that are just entering sectors where they are underrepresented. The sustainability and the engagement to keep them involved and to keep them motivated is critical. And I would like very much to see more of that and would be happy to work on that. So again, thank you all. This is great work and we look forward to working with you.
Thank you, Pat. I've just understood that one of the prior people that we read was on. So David Heppenstall, we understand that you are on and we are.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Hey, so I just wanted to briefly say that I really appreciated the presentations and we were very much involved in much of the same training work. But I do want to respond to one of your key questions here with respect to the small, right now the biggest challenge I think we're facing is electrification. And there are many in the city of New York, many of the workers are actually work for firms that are plumbing and heating contractors. And the transition to a new business model for those contractors is one of the biggest challenges. And supporting their workforce is a huge challenge. And we hope to participate and are working to participate in that, facing that challenge. But I just want to remind everybody that it's not a slam dunk. It's not a simple one. It's a very challenging. It's good to see that NYSERDA is supporting taking that challenge on, and AEA is fully there on board to work and support it, particularly as they work in weatherization and LMI, affordable housing, okay, which is really critical. And most of those are centrally heated systems, and not HVAC, not conducive and existing housing stock to easily, cost effectively, to change to fully heat pump systems. So just want to raise that and remind us all that I know we know it, and we look forward to the opportunity to work with Syria and all the partners. Thank you.
Thank you. Great. Thank you, David. So next up, we have Dwayne Norris. And again, just in case this helps folks get read, we have Sarah Eccles, Kate Krug, Kathleen Culhane following thereafter. So Dwayne Norris from Social Center Energy and Clean Energy Academy. We will be elevating you and awaiting your input.
Dwayne is not on the line.
Okay. Looks like he might have dropped off then. And Sarah Eccles. Do we have you, Sarah?
Sarah, you are a panelist now, and you can unmute and share your comments.
Hi, I am just on for non-traditional employment for women. We just are tuning in to support the DOL and NYSERDA and news partnership with both of them. And we just don't have any further comments to share at this time, so no need to call on Kate Krueger, Kathleen Culhane. Thanks so much. It was a great presentation.
Wonderful. Wonderful, and thank you for noting that for us. It moves us along a little bit in the list. Perfect. So next we have, I think, some of the people that have been letting us know that they are interested in joining via the Q&A function or interested in speaking via the Q&A function. So first we have Joanna Olson-Smith. And so Joanna, we are going to elevate you here momentarily and you'll be able to share your input.
Joanna, you can unmute now and speak.
Good afternoon. Can you hear me?
Yes. We can. Yes.
Great.
Now. Thank you.
Yes, I'm Joanna Altman-Smith. I am here as a citizen. I am unaffiliated, and I have been watching your working group over the months, and I'm excited by the progress you guys are making. But I had a couple of things I wanted to call to your attention. One is that I'm concerned about, there's been a lot of talk about early retirement and pension benefits for fossil fuel workers who might be able to leave their jobs ahead of schedule. And I wanted to make sure that you keep in mind that there should be some kind of distinguishing factor between workers and executives on this front. I feel pretty strongly that anyone who's been in a decision-making capacity should not be in any way rewarded for their management of the willful destruction of our environment. It's obviously very different when you're talking about an hourly wage worker. But for people who've been making choices, I don't think there should be any special treatment. And then related somewhat is also a concern that I've heard a lot of industry groups talking about prioritizing transitioning existing workers from fossil fuel industries. And I'm concerned that this may disadvantage moving these jobs to our frontline communities, which we know is a mandate of the CLCPA. I guess a larger issue that it may be something you guys are going to get to, but how are all these programs going to be funded? I hear a lot of people on the call today thanking NYSERDA for funding their programs, which is great. But if we want to actually expand into communities and environmental justice impact zones, we're gonna need a lot more funding. And along these lines, I just wanted to encourage all the panelists and attendees today to champion the CCIA, which is going to be coming through the New York State Senate and House, and it's an actual working plan on how to fund all these great things we've been talking about. I want to finally just suggest that if you guys do a public comment session again, you front end your agenda with it, because a lot of the people looking to comment are not paid for their participation or are working for nonprofits and are already quite taxed for time. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, moving to the next, we have Adam Flint. Adam, we will be elevating you momentarily. And look forward to your comment.
Adam, you can unmute yourself now and share your comments.
Thanks very much. Can you hear me?
Yes. Good to begin now. Thank you.
Great. My name is Adam Flint. I work as Director of Clean Energy Programs at Network for a Sustainable Tomorrow in Binghamton. I have a number of comments related to some matters that I'm not sure that the working group has in its scope, but I think ought to, and then a couple of things that are, I think, well within it. I'll start with the latter. When looking at transitions from power plant jobs and other technical jobs in manufacturing and elsewhere that are likely to be eliminated over a short period of time, we might want to look at some of the areas where we have huge needs in the new energy economy, three of which I can talk about in terms of building operations and maintenance, heat pumps, power engineering, and design and installation of various systems based on electricity. The second point has to do with the intersection of the work of this group and the power generation group. One of the concerns that I know has been expressed repeatedly is making sure that the new jobs pay as well as the old jobs. And when I look at, for example, the solar industry, one of the issues here is the value stack is often not robust enough to support the kind of good wages that we want to see. So I think in order for that to work, we're going to have to see a much more robust value stack for solar in general, so that those jobs can be more unionized and prevailing wage, and the projects can still pencil. The final and most important point I want to make, which a little bit echoes what I've heard previously from the person from Hudson Valley Community College, I'm a little concerned that there isn't a presence of what I'd call the traditional STEM ecosystem in this process, that is K-12 education department, BOCES, SUNY, and so forth. You know, the folks who are going to be hopefully justly transitioning into new positions are just part of the picture, and they will want to take advantage of that system also. I see no place where there is integration between the educational system and the efforts being made here, and that concerns me a lot. I think that the job study that's being carried out should look at education and training pathways in the formal educational system, as well as the other work that's being done, should research what assets New York State currently has from Katy University and what do we need. And then I want to echo the previous speaker's support of the Climate and Community Investment Act as a funding stream. So the one takeaway here is we need to have comprehensive clean energy careers pathways that will allow folks who are transitioning from old to new energy jobs, folks who are coming through the K-12 system, and folks who have had challenges to employment that have been badly served by the system. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you. And that concludes our list of those that we have in the queue. I did want to loop back to a couple of those of you that we couldn't hear previously. Soli Shin from GARP, we see that you were on the meeting, and it looks like perhaps you have a headset connected now. If technology is communicating to us correctly, I would love to try elevating you again and seeing if we can hear from you, just in case we can.
Hello, can you guys hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Hi. Thanks. My name is Soli, and just wanted to commend everybody, both all the panelists and the working group, for this amazing event and opportunity to speak. I would like to just point out that I am also just speaking not on behalf of my organization, but just as a citizen. And my question/comment was really on whether or not there would be more opportunities to look beyond funding for mere entry level type of positions, although that's obviously very important and plays a huge role, especially for our youth. But once they are able to kind of get the job readiness skills that is pretty fundamental and basic, I would love to see the Just Transition Working Group looking at ways to accelerate leadership positions and managerial roles within the clean energy economy. So that was my comment. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you. And then I just want to take one more second, and the rest of the tech team, let me know if I'm misspeaking here. Did Jennifer Schneider drop off? Do we have an ability to elevate you? You had been on earlier.
She's no longer on the line.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, then that takes us to the end of the list that we have. And with that, I will pass back over to conclude the meeting from the co-chair. So back to Commissioner Reardon.
Thank you very much, and thank you to everybody for such valuable input. We apologize for the snafus with getting people heard. You know, welcome to our new normal. This has been an amazing session, and it will be incredibly helpful to the Just Transition Working Group as we continue to work on our workforce-related tasks and recommendations. What you've said today has been very, very helpful. We now have to move to wrap things up, so let's turn to some next steps. First, for anyone who chose not to or was unable to provide input today, please do submit your feedback to the working group's email address listed here, jtwg@nicerta. Our next Just Transition Working Group meeting will take place on February 23rd at 9 a.m. Make sure to join us there for our continuing discussion. We always like to have the public on with us. And with that, we'll conclude today's session with a repeat of our tremendous thanks for everyone who provided input today, BW, our four panelists, members of the public and stakeholders, and especially to Farah for facilitating the public comment session. That's never easy on these things. Thank you to everyone. Your input has been very valuable, and we'll talk with you again soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Thank you for your time and consideration. Maybe. Would you please provide an update? specifically. No. When will construction begin and has a good name? Increasing in. Well maintained. Safe and well maintained throughout the construction period. Well, you don't tell me who to talk to. What am I supposed to do? Okay, that's done. Yes, it will. You don't acknowledge me? I go to the media. It's really getting simple.
To get my cell phone.